This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us, and thank you for joining me today. You may have noticed over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've been pretty erratic with podcasts. Unfortunately, things have just been crazy here in Cape Town for various reasons, and I'll share some of those with you in a short while. But to give you a bit of an update, I'm actually backdating these because they've been recorded a while ago and I need to catch up, but that's neither here nor there. So this podcast is actually, although I'm publishing it now, is from the beginning of August. So there's going to be a few coming thick and fast as we catch those up. But today's story, or today's athlete that we catch up with, is Hayden Armstrong. And I look forward to sharing Hayden's story with you. A fascinating, fascinating story. And hopefully you'll get lots out of it as well. And then stick around to the end of today's podcast. I've got a fairly big announcement to make about the future of the Kona Edge. And yeah, that's coming up in a short while. Before we touch base with Hayden, let's head over to the Coach's Corner. Today's coach in the spotlight is Coach Stephen Brands, a Next Level Triathlon. They've proved their results year after year. Steve has personally guided athletes to an ITU Age Group World Championship, Ironman Hawaii, and has qualified over 20 athletes to the 70.3 World Championships. Steve isn't your traditional multi-sport coach. He's a full-time endurance coach who works with athletes remotely as well as athletes in a DTE in Madison, Wisconsin. Steve is also one of a few coaches in the USA High Performance Mentorship Coaching Program, where he gets to work with the select high performance athletes in the USAT CRP program. In 2015, Steve was selected to run a week-long Cam Tri Camp in Trinidad and Grenada, where he was responsible for working with their top athletes as well as educating their coaches on proper racing, training, and season preparation. Some of Steve's athletes have won an ITU Age Group World Championship, won multiple USAT Age Group National Championships, won USAT Duathlon National Championships, podiumed at the 2016 Ironman World Championships, have run sub-3-hour marathon during the Ironman, and qualified athletes to Ironman and 70.3 World Championships. If you'd like to find out more about Steve and Next Level Triathlon, all you need to do is head over to the konaedge.com/coaching or click through to nextleveltriathlon.org. All the details on that website. Okay, that's thekonaedge.com/coaching. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured here on the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to that exact webpage. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Tasmania we go now, in Australia, to catch up with our next guest, Hayden Armstrong. Hayden, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Hayden, we've had quite a few Aussies on the podcast, but we've never had anybody from the state of Tasmania. And for those of us who are geographically challenged, it's a little island just off the coast of Australia. It's quite far south. Tell us a little bit about life on the island. It's a beautiful place. I've never been, but gee, I've seen some pictures, and it's not difficult to look at.
No, Tasmania is a beautiful place. It's definitely a lifestyle choice. The conditions down here during winter are challenging, but obviously in summer it's an amazing place to train. Obviously we've produced some amazing cyclists during our little stint of being Tasmania, and obviously we've got great roads to ride on, great swimming, and some running trails to die for. So it's a bit of a triathlete's paradise in summer, but winter's challenging, but a wonderful lifestyle choice, and you're sort of 2 hours from anything.
I love that you use the word challenging during winter, because let's be honest, challenging is probably a nice way to describe it. It's rubbish in winter.
Rubbish would be the choice. I was to go for a ride today, but given it was -1 outside and windy and a bit sleety, it was time to sit on the rollers.
I love that. But, I mean, it's not a – I mean, triathlon in Australia is pretty big, but Tasmania, Tasmania is a small place from a population perspective. It's not the triathlon mecca of the Big Island, for example, in Hawaii, is it?
No, it's not the triathlon mecca of the Big Island. We probably normally have between one or two that might venture over to Hawaii each year, but certainly there's a long distance scene down here. Probably there's a number of participants that did the Ultraman this year. I think there were six or seven from Tassie, so that was well represented. But in terms of numbers, it's pretty small. But we try and punch above our weight in numbers, because some of the quality of athletes that have actually come out of Tassie are pretty good. You've got obviously Joe Gambles, that's a Tassie boy. We've got Todd Skipworth that calls Tasmania home, and then you had Jones Hodge, who unfortunately had a couple of injuries, but was a fantastic 70.3 athlete as well. So, yeah, we've done all right.
Yeah, and you talk about punching above your weight. There's something about Tasmania, and it's not just in triathlon. If you look at some of the overall sports people that Tasmania has produced, and I think just of the likes of cricket, the likes of David Boone's from down there. He's a pretty gritty character. I think Ricky Ponting's also from Tasmania, if I recall correctly. And they build you tough down there, don't they?
Well, they try to. I don't know whether we're that tough in winter, but I think mentally we're pretty tough, and it is a competitive little environment down here. We sort of live in our own little bubble, but when you go out to play on the big stage, your competitiveness does assist you.
Has Tasmania always been home for you, or have you shunted across to Tassie to sort of, like you say, a lifestyle choice?
No, I've been a Tasmanian through and through. Been very fortunate to do a lot of travel, but it's a great place to raise a family, and it is definitely a lifestyle choice.
Let's talk about your sort of sporting background. Most Aussies were active growing up, and I take it was no different for you.
No, I was an active Aussie normal kid. Played soccer as a kid, and then cricket and football, and obviously had to choose in between those, and then sort of graduated to skiing and surfing when I grew up, and I had a bit of a running background as well, but nothing that I really honed in and specialised on. I was a normal, everyday Tassie kid that enjoyed mucking around outdoors and playing footy with their mates.
When did you get exposed to triathlon as a sport?
Oh, I reckon I got exposed to triathlon probably around, I'd be about 8 years ago, I reckon, 7 or 8 years ago. And I was just involved in a serious car accident, and it sort of made me change my focus on things. And I had a friend of mine that gave me a triathlon magazine, and he said, have a read of this. And I read about it, and I read about the Ironman Port Macquarie, and I thought I wouldn't mind doing that one day. So I asked a few people what it was all about, and the rest is history.
That's awesome. Tell me about the sort of car accident and the change of thinking. That sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, look, I was just involved in a serious accident, and I was lucky to be alive. I'd come out of it pretty lightly, which was great. But I'd always had a way to deal with the stress of it and the coping mechanisms. Because my father was also diagnosed with cancer in the same space of 2 weeks. That was a pretty challenging time, and I thought I needed something to take my mind off it. And I had just started sort of riding bikes and playing around for 2 or 3 months. And then I thought, look, what better way to relieve the stress and the anxiety and make a change and go and do some training and sort of try and get some good miles in and just enjoy doing it. And that's what I did. And the first race I did, I think, was the my first triathlon was a half Ironman. That was the first one I ever did. So I jumped into the deep end on a quick rope.
Go big or go home.
That's exactly right. And I found out what it was all about.
Hayden, how long was it from you reading that magazine and to your first full Ironman at Port Macquarie?
It was 12 months.
Okay, so a year's turnaround. Would you advise that if you had to go back and start over again? Do you think that's enough to get you ready for your first Ironman?
Oh, look, I think knowing what I do know now, probably not. I'd start on the small way and work my way up. But certainly from my perspective of view, I was really raw and had really no idea what I was getting myself into. And I thought it couldn't be that bad, surely. I found out how painful it can be, but also at the same time how rewarding it was. And it really opened me up to what I should be doing and how I should address it. And that's probably where my fortune was in learning the ropes of triathlon, I suppose.
How did you go in there?
Yeah, I'll start.
How did you go in that first one?
Oh, Did all right. I think my first Ironman, I did just under 10 hours. And I was happy with that. I think I did 9:50 or something like that. And I actually missed out on Hawaii, I think, by a spot, and really gave no consideration or thought to it whatsoever, because it wasn't even on my radar until I got talking to someone that was over there who was a coach. And I didn't know he was a coach. He's a very low-key sort of guy, and I'm still with him today. And he sort of really harnessed my potential and made me to commit to something that I thought I could do, because I really, to be honest, didn't even know much about Kona. So I wasn't really attuned to it, but certainly from my next Ironman event, which was New Zealand, there was a focus there to think that we could do it.
I find that incredible. You're pretty blasé about it, but to dip under 10 for your first time out, and like you say, not really knowing what you're doing, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it, but like at the same time, I had really no expectation, and I think that's really my key to having a good race is don't expect anything. It is what it is, and you've just got to roll with it. And I've always had that sort of mindset and just be relaxed going into it. But obviously the quicker you get, the more pressure you put on yourself. And there's areas where you can think back at a race and say, look, I could have done this better, or I could have done that better. And you just learn from them. And, you know, we gradually over time, it probably took a process of another 12 months to really dial a few things in and learn another lot from the New Zealand race where I qualified. And, yeah, it was a fantastic achievement to get there. So
I love that way of thinking, that it is what it is. You can't control the uncontrollables. I mean, if the weather's poor on the day, everyone's got the same conditions. You need to just take care of what you can take care of. And if that's good enough, then that's good enough. If it's not, so be it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was instilled with me. I mean, my coach is Grant Giles of Aeromax, and he did a lot of work with me around mental toughness and mental strength as well. And, you know, I'd always have a moan about, you know, what happened, it was windy or something. And he said, it is how it is, and everyone's in the same boat, and you've just got to rise to the occasion. And basically, as the one famous triathlete said, Chris McCormack, embrace the suck.
Yep. Put on your big girl pants, as they say where I'm from. And
yep.
And just deal with it. And it's interesting. Yep. You talk about the mental toughness. It's almost the athletes at the highest level, from an ability point of view, I don't think there's too much difference. They can all run a fast marathon. They can all do a fast bike. They're all great swimmers. But at the end of the day, what separates good athletes from great athletes is how, as you say, they embrace the suck, and how they can just hang in there when they're hurting, because everyone goes through patches like that, and it's how you react to those patches that really make a difference.
Yeah, I think it's 100%. You have to stay calm and you have to stay focused throughout that. Everyone's going to have a bad patch, but you've just got to take it on board and roll with it. It will subside at some point. And if you tell your mind you're hurting, your body will just go with the flow and you'll just call it a day. And you see so many people that, you know, don't leave it out there, and, you know, they'll go and nail themselves, and then all of a sudden there's the pain kicks in and they think, oh, I can't do it. Well, you know, you can, but you've just got to apply yourself in a different way.
Have you got strategies during training or racing that you sort of employ that help you get through those patches? Because as you say, they don't last forever. The good news is the bad patches don't last forever, but the bad news is the good patches don't last forever either.
No, they don't. And I think I have a really simple approach to it. And, I do a little bit of visualization, I suppose, is, I see if there's a gap opening up, you know, you stay calm and you stay focused and you don't try and just immediately shut it down. You just gradually bring it back. If someone's going to put on a surge of pace on the bike, yes, you've got to roll with it. But at the same time, they're not going to keep that pace for the whole entire time. It's going to come back and it's going to calm down at some point. So you just visualize yourself pulling that gap in, and making sure that you're staying calm and focused during that time, and you can, you know, visualize yourself being back in the lead or being back in the mix. And, you know, it's worked, and but it took a long time to get to that. And I think my last, you know, 3-odd Ironmans were probably the better ones, and I was able to really harness that. And it sounds a bit blasé, and it sounds a bit kooky, but it actually seriously has worked.
Yeah, and it comes with experience. The more you practice it, the more you put yourself in those situations, the better you get. Let's talk about that Ironman New Zealand where you qualified. What did you do differently? You mentioned obviously getting a serious coach, but what did you do differently in the build up to New Zealand that you did to Ironman Port Macquarie in the build up to your first one?
Oh, look, I think the big difference was structure in that one. I really was flying by the seat of my pants on my first ever Ironman. I had no really idea what to expect. I didn't really race with nutrition very well. I was pretty raw on the bike and the run. I didn't even use a heart rate monitor. I had nothing really, and it was just all by feel. But most of my racing is by feel still. But no, I got myself a coach. I looked at nutrition, and there was some structure that was put into a program, and that really helped deliver a bit of focus. But and we just focused on that race and that race alone. And you know, there was no real expectation that I would qualify. But if I did, you know, it happened. And I think that was the greatest thing. There's a lot of people go into an Ironman race wanting to qualify for Kona. Don't think about it. It's going to be some people's downfall.
Let's talk about what it does take. What do you think, in your opinion, is the secret to qualifying for the World Champs?
Look, I think you've got to surround yourself with good people. And first of all, I think you should get yourself a coach. Don't just go trialing the internet for programs. I think you should talk to someone about what your goals are, look at, you know, what your strengths and what your weaknesses are, and someone will actually look at concentrating on those strengths and weaknesses, have structure, and also make sure that, you know, you're getting the appropriate recovery and rest, and also making sure that your nutrition's right. And don't take yourself too seriously. That's just me. Like, so many people just talk it up and put it out there. Just get out there and do it.
I love that, because that is such a big triathlon thing, isn't it? I mean, you see it time and time again at races. You arrive and someone pulls in there with the best gear. They've got these wheels on the bike that, I mean, pros would look at that and shudder. And then you see them out on the course and you think to yourself, what are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, look, and I'm a victim of that. I looked at that when I first started my triathlons, and I saw those people with all this gear and thought, geez, what am I doing here? You know, am I actually worthy of being here? And then, you know, you've got to believe in yourself, and you have to trust and believe in your own ability, and someone is going to back you. And if you think you can do it, you just go out there and do it. Don't worry about what anybody else and how anyone else is training or what they're saying about they're going to burn the house down on the bike or run away with it. Just focus on yourself and you'll have a much better race.
And it's so true, because if you do start focusing on what everyone else is doing, you don't know what their build-up has been like. You don't know what their training load has been like. You need to again, control what you can control. And if someone's better on the day, then so be it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my Ironman races progressively got better and better and better because it was consistency over those three disciplines. Yes, you've got to have an X factor in some type of discipline, whether it be the swim, bike or run. And for me, the bike was my X factor, where I could actually get away and get up the road and put a bit of hurt into a few people. But that comes with time. But, yeah, just be consistent and don't worry about the person next to you.
I mean, that is the number one thing that I've picked up. I mean, I've done, I don't know, probably over 100 of these sort of interviews, and consistency is the number one thing that I pick up from every single one of the age groups that I chat to. And it's not necessarily consistency in the build-up to one Ironman, but it's consistency over time. And like you say, it's a 2-3-4 year process, sometimes even longer, and you've got to see it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to learn by your mistakes. I mean, sometimes you just, you know, you'll make an error in training or you'll make an error during a race, and you have to put that in the memory bank for the next race. And so, you know, if I'm there again, I won't do it.
Let's talk about some of those mistakes. What are some of the big mistakes you've made in your career, and what have you learned from it, and how have you fixed it?
Well, look, I think some of the bigger mistakes that I've made is going too hard too early, and thinking that I'm right, or you're getting on the bike and you're feeling super comfortable, and you skip a bit of nutrition, and then 2 hours later, that's really going to catch up with you, and it's going to bite you hard on the run. Those are the sort of things that I've really learned. So that's the biking side. Swimming, look, don't get psyched out during a mass start. It is what it is. If you're going to have a few punches thrown and goggles ripped off, just stay calm. And, you know, within 500 metres, everything will sort itself out. And don't get flustered by it. And don't miss a pack on the swim. Make sure that you stay on someone's feet and you keep pushing and driving as hard as you can, so you can get yourself a good position for the ride. From riding, if there's a bunch that goes, you got to go with them. Don't let them continuously keep dropping back and dropping back. Your race will just slide backwards. And then for running, just hitting that number, just being consistent, getting into the run comfortably, making sure that when you're running, give yourself, 15, 20 minutes to settle in and then go to work, trying to hit that number that you want to hit, and making sure that you hydrate and have the right nutrition. They're all things that I've learned throughout racing, how to cope with the pressure.
What are you most proud of in your Ironman triathlon career to date?
Oh, look, each race has a different achievement, but I suppose probably the most proudest thing I have is I set myself a goal to race 5 Konas in a row. That's what I wanted to do. And I just applied myself to have that goal. The first one that I ticked off, I thought, yeah, that's a fluke. But the second one, I thought, no, I can do it. The third one, you just got to believe in yourself and just want to get better and better and better. And the fifth one, my goal was to go under 9 hours. And, I achieved that, and that's always going to be really special to me, because it is a hard place to get under 5 hours and 9 hours. Some people say it was a quick day. I beg to differ. I think it's all about what's in your ticker and what drives you to get there. And so 2013, I went under 9 hours. Had a break from the sport for a couple of years in terms of the Ironman, and went to 70.3. Learned a lot about racing 70.3s. And then come out and break the course record last year in New Zealand. I think I was 8:47 or something for my age group, and another Kona qualification. So those are really good moments.
I mean, you talk about getting to Kona once and feeling, well, perhaps that was a fluke, and a lot of people will say this, that getting to Kona once is not necessarily the easy bit, but it's going back. You almost doubt yourself, because once you get to the island, you look around and you think, gee, how did I end up here? But to go back a second time is pretty tough, and that's where you talk about the belief and just knowing that, I belong here. I've done the work, I'm good enough, and this is where I should be.
Yeah, and I think that the first race is all about learning and going out there and just enjoying being part of the spectacle as it is, and just have no expectations and learn from it, because I tell you what, Kona's just a whole level above the next triathlon. The biggest things that I learned about that over there was that you can't get away, you can't get up the road, because everyone's just as strong as you. You're racing people from around the world that have, come first, second or third on the podium, and they're just as strong as what you are. And that really comes down to that mental toughness. But if you can enjoy the race and just be, I know it sounds a bit funny, but be at one with the island and just make sure that you embrace what that island throws up, you'll have a much better race by doing it. And I've done it 6 times now, but the third and the fourth and the fifth time, it was pretty well game on to go out there and give it your best, and that you belong there, and that you've done it a couple of times before. You're used to the course, what conditions are going to throw up, and it just becomes more and more comfortable. But still that feeling of coming down the Leahy Drive and finishing, and also just being part of what that race is something very special.
What makes it so special?
I think it's just the island itself. I think it's the course that it throws up. It's the build up to the race. It's the people that are there. That, you know, there's all shapes and sizes, and there's all walks of life that come to the island to come and watch the spectacle as what is Iron Man. And basically, it's the world's best at that time on the stage. And it's a fantastic one-day race. And, you know, the conditions are just can be so challenging and so tough. But it's something that you just embrace and enjoy, and it does go by so quickly. And then it's, you know, you can be over there for 10 days and it goes like a flash. And the other thing that I really enjoy is taking my family over, and we love just hanging out together on the beach or going snorkeling or something. And it's a really relaxing way to go into a race.
And that's also, I mean, you talk about people taking themselves way too seriously. The way I've approached races, I mean, let's be honest, training for an Ironman is tough. It's probably tougher than actually doing the race. I mean, the amount of work that goes in and that sort of thing. And the race itself is a celebration for all the work you've put in. That's the way I approach it. And by the sounds of it, even though you are racing hard in a race like Kona, you do see it that way, that it's a case or an opportunity to sort of give something back to yourself, but also to your loved ones for the sacrifices that everyone's put in the build-up to it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, look, we're all racing for different reasons, and I think it's most important that to have a reality check is you're only racing yourself. And, look, no doubt there's some egos out there that are just Kona junkies and that's all they ever think about. But, you know, life's a lot bigger than that. But, you know, in the moment, in that time, it's a fantastic day to be part of it. But then you've got the chance to, once you finish, to reflect on how you went, enjoy your time with your family, and you know, take a reality check on life, I suppose.
Let's talk about life outside of triathlon. You're self-employed. You've got your own business. You've mentioned you've got a family, so you're married. Little one, tell me a little bit about sort of how you get the juggle right. And obviously, Tasmania doesn't have, let's say, traffic like you would necessarily in a big city. So you probably don't spend as much time commuting, but you still need to pay bills and keep things going. How do you get that balance right?
Oh, look, that's it's a very difficult question, I think. You know, look, there's a lot of sacrifices that are made, but I think I've got an amazing wife that supports me in my endeavours. And, you know, my daughter enjoys going out and participating in races because she has the opportunity to go and travel and see new things. But, look, you've got to surround yourself with support and great people, and make sure that you communicate to them what you're doing, and that you're going out to do something, and that, you know, if you're going to be 5 hours out there, you'll be 5 hours out there, no more, no less. Get back in and start again, get back into work. And the same on a long ride on a weekend. If you go out on a Sunday or a Saturday for a long ride or a run, as soon as you come back, you spend some good quality family time. And sometimes you've got to put the work in at night. It's just finding that balance, but certainly a supportive environment and having people understand what your goals are and helping you achieve that. I know it's an individual sport, but at the same time, there's so many people that bring it together to make sure that you cross that finish line.
Let's talk goals. You've had some great successes over your Ironman career. What's still left for you to achieve? What are you chasing? What do you still want to do?
Oh, look, I've probably got some unfinished business in 70.3. I've been, you know, I would really like to get a win in a world championships in the 70.3 format. Whether I do or I don't, you know, that's up to me. I've had some setbacks last year. I fractured my hip in a bike accident and just had to come back and build up from there. So, you know, Kona wasn't really a fantastic race for me, but certainly I was just stoked to be there and participate in it. And I was lucky enough to race. And I had an all right race, but there was a lot of pain in the hip and things. So I've just sort of tried to get that right and recover. And I'll do some more 70.3s, I think, next year, and we'll just see where that takes me. But Kona's always there and abouts, and I think I've still got one left in me. But you know, whether that happens in the next couple of years is another thing. The stars have to align with your work and family commitments. But you know, long distance racing will always be there. But I'd love to go and do another 70.3 worlds and try and get a really good result out of that. And in doing that, I'd have to focus pretty hard on the running to make sure that I can get off the bike in a good condition. And I think that that's been my downfall in 70.3s, is the running off the bike. I mean, I can still run a sort of a 119 or a 120, but unfortunately, it's not getting any slower. And the body's aging, so it's a bit of a challenge to actually get those times down. I've broken 4 hours in a 70.3, but whether I can get there again, I've just got to work really hard to get there.
You talk about as you're getting older, getting slower. That's a challenge for a lot of triathletes. Is it something that really bugs you, or is it, again, it is what it is?
Oh, look, everyone's going to age. I think you've just got to approach things differently. You've got to approach your training differently. You've got to approach your recovery differently. You are not going to back up the next day or the day after by having two or three solid hits in a row. You've just got to understand that your body's changing, and I think it's important just to recognise that. As frustrating as it sometimes can be, I think from my perspective, I've had a super run. I've been injury free. I've looked after myself, and I've had great support. And you know, if I can continue to just race and enjoy it, I think the results will just happen naturally. It is what it is. I've always gone out with a race, and people may not believe me, but I've always just wanted to finish. But how high up the pecking order you finish depends on how you apply yourself on the day.
We've got quite an interesting sort of blend of people who listen to this podcast. There's obviously a lot of age groupers who are gunning for Kona, but we've also got a lot of novices and people just starting out in the sport. What advice would you give to someone who's considering their first Ironman? What would you tell them?
Oh, look, I think if you're considering your first Ironman, get some help. You know, if you really want to go and do one, go and get a coach, and talk to people that are professionals in that area. Don't do any internet trolling yourself. Get the right advice. Get a good nutrition plan going, and get some structure in your training. And have no expectations on your first race. Just go out there and learn the ropes as such. Don't worry about what anyone else is doing, and just focus on your day and making sure that what you've put into practice during training, you put into race day, and don't do anything different. Just be structured and measured about it.
And go out and enjoy it. It's a cool day out. Look, your first one's always special.
Yeah, it's a great day. And it does go really quick. I mean, even though some people might be out there for, you know, 14 or 15 hours, you know, they're true warriors. And I tell you what, I said to my wife once, the day someone gives me a glow stick and a rain protector, I'm out. I mean, those are the people that actually have true determination and true grit. And they'll just get better and better as they go.
I was going to say, some of us are out there longer than others, and I'm in the first half. I don't fit into the sub 10 on debut, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, look, that's the great thing about the sport, is that everyone is different. Everyone has different aspirations and goals, and I don't think that you can dismiss the people that are out there for that, you know, 16 odd or 15 hours or even 12 or 13 hours. They do an amazing job, and, you know, they stay true to themselves and they just tough it out. And, you know, everyone, I suppose, sometimes wants to go fast and wants to go under 9 hours or wants to go under 10 hours. Remember that you are you, and if you give it 100%, that's all you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I did an Ironman a few years ago with my dad, who had just turned 67. Oh, wow. Did his first one, and we were out there for just under 17 hours. I think he did a 16:47, and that was a long day. Let me tell you, I've got newfound respect for anybody who finishes between 16 and 17. That is one hell of a long day. And you know what? They get the same medal as the guy who wins, and they're an Ironman. And absolutely, I think that's what I love about what I love about the sport.
And you've got bragging rights, so that's the greatest thing. I mean, we've always tried to, in Hawaii, once the race is over and it's finished, go back to the finish line at midnight and go and watch those people come over. You know, it's amazing when people are between, you know, 70 and 80 years of age and they're out there doing it, that, you know, they're 40 years older than what you are. You know, just give back and give them a cheer and give them a pat on the back as they come through, because they are tough.
Yeah, and that's my Kona strategy, is to outlive everyone in my age group, Aidan.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a really wise choice. I think there's a bloke by the name of Lou Hollander that did that pretty well. I think he won his first championships at 80-odd, and I think he said the crowd, he was hoping that everyone would die off and he'd be able to come through with the goods, which he did.
My problem is with everyone's ability at that 80-year-old at the moment, I must have lived till about 105 to qualify.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I think the other thing about the 80-year-olds is it's funny that there's a space of probably 200 metres in distance for 17 hours. They're looking at each other all day. You know, isn't that amazing if you can come in within, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of one another, but you've been out there for 16 hours and you can see their back, but you just can't get past them.
No, it's an incredible, incredible sport. Well, Hayden, thanks for your time today on the Cone Edge. I look forward to chatting about the individual disciplines in the next time we chat, but we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today.
No worries. All good. Cheers.
Thank you very much to Hayden for sharing his story with us. I mentioned at the start of the podcast that I've got a pretty important announcement to make about the future of the Kona Edge, and to give you a bit of background before I get into to where we're going. But to get into a bit of background, the Kona Edge started, it was almost 2 years ago. It was November 2015 is when I started it. And you may or may not know the story of how it started, but I'd been sitting on this idea for a long, long time of chatting to very competitive age groupers, because there were lots of platforms talking to the professionals. There were lots of platforms talking to athletes who had really inspiring stories, but there weren't any platforms consistently talking to top world-class age group of triathletes. And I thought there was a bit of a gap in the market, and it turns out there was. And since we've started, we are currently closing in, and it should happen in the next week or so, closing in on 750,000 downloads of this podcast in less than 2 years, which is superb. I'm thoroughly grateful for everyone who listens and downloads the podcast. I love doing it, and obviously there's a lot of people who love listening to it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had that many downloads. But we are sitting in a bit of a situation at the moment, and I'm going to level with you. I'm going to lay things out there and be totally transparent. But we are sitting in a bit of a situation here at the Kona Edge for a number of reasons. So outside of what I do on this podcast, I have a day job. I'm a sports journalist, and I also have a business where we create this sort of content for clients. And on two fronts, on the day job perspective, there've been some pretty big changes from my day job. And yeah, it's pretty unsettling, if I have to be honest. And yeah, I'm not quite sure how long it's still going to continue, but I have pretty much been put on alert that things may be changing. I had contract negotiations last week, and yeah, my contract's only been renewed for, trying to do the math, for another 6 months. So we are sitting in a situation, very precarious situation, where I don't have any long-term job security. So I really need to hustle and make sure that my business is doing well. Then our biggest client currently decides they want to go AWOL. And in going AWOL, they decide they're not paying us. So they owe us a boatload of money for content like this that we've created for their platforms. And yeah, just decided that's it, they're not paying, and the content is theirs, which we've created and they haven't paid for. So we are sitting in a situation where, first of all, they owe us a lot of money, and second of all, we need to go the legal route to try and either reclaim that money, which we would like because we can't do anything with that content that they've commissioned us to create. But yeah, otherwise we need to pull that content down. So we're sitting in a huge situation there. I'm married, I've got 3 kids, I've got school fees, I've got rent to pay. But just like everyone else, we'll make things work. But that's where the Kona Edge comes in. This has been a passion project of mine for the last 2 years. It hasn't necessarily made any money. Every now and again, we do get some in from advertising, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But unfortunately, it does cost me money. There's transcriptions, it's time. There's a lot of time that goes into creating a 5 podcast a week podcast. And yeah, that's where we've had to draw a line in the sand. So going forward, this is what is going to happen with the Kona Edge. I am on a bit of a sort of, I don't want to say a deadline, but the line has been drawn in the sand between my wife and I that this thing has to be self-sufficient. Otherwise, we have to pull the plug. And we've pretty much given it till the end of November. So on the Kona Edge's 2-year birthday, if it's not supporting itself, it's got to go. We've got to really simplify our lives and and make sure that where we're putting time and effort in, we are getting rewards for our family and going forward to be able to financially and economically sustain ourselves. So that's where we're at the moment. I've got two and a bit months to make sure that the Kona Edge does become self-supportive, and that's where I want to ask for your help. So over the last almost 2 years, we've been creating 5 podcasts a week, and that is a ton of work. If anybody's ever created a podcast, you'll know how much it goes into creating one podcast a week. We're doing it 5 times a week. So the rhythm is pretty simple. On a Monday on the Kona Edge, you'll hear a post about running. On a Tuesday, it's nutrition. Wednesday is a story like today's one. Thursday is swimming, and Friday is biking. So those are the 5, and it's every week that's the rhythm. So what we've decided to do is cut back on the public podcast feed. So we're still going to create all that content, but unfortunately, some of it needs to go behind a paywall. And in order to access it, we're asking for your help. So we're going to be publishing a podcast every single Wednesday, come hell or high water, until the end of November. And that's when we'll make a decision whether we're continuing with this or not. So as it stands now, if you subscribe to this feed, that's the podcast you're going to get. You'll get one a week for the remaining 2.5 months until the end of November. And then the other podcast that we are creating, we are putting onto our Patreon feed. So if you would consider becoming a patron, you can get access to the entire Kona Edge as it stands right now. And yeah, we're asking for $5 a month. So essentially buying us a cup of coffee, you keep the lights on. And yeah, that's pretty much where we're at now. If we don't get the support that we need, unfortunately, we're going to have to pull the plug on all of it. So I'm asking you to open your heart and your wallet. If you get any value out of these podcasts, yeah, please consider supporting us. Head over to thekonaedge.com/support. That's where you can do it. And as long as you're a patron, you'll keep getting those feeds. It's pretty simple, and I want to try and keep it as simple as possible. So that's thekonaedge.com/support. Apologies for venting and just vomiting this all over you, but that's unfortunately the situation that we are sitting in right now. And yeah, I want to make this thing work. I'm so passionate about the Kona Edge, and the last thing I want to do is pull the plug, but we are in that situation at the moment where it is do or die, it's make or break, and I've got 2.5 months to make this happen. So with your help, hopefully we can, and yeah, I look forward to chatting to you on the other side. From myself, Brad Brown, have yourself a good one. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.